last speaker before lunch is Craig Lister. Craig's had a long period of involvement in the NHS and he's now working on the Green Gym arena on behalf of conservation volunteers. So a very warm welcome to Craig. Thank you.
Okay, good. So I've got a lapel mic because I'm really bad at standing still or sitting still. And also, it's nearly lunchtime, and if you look over there, there's an awesome sort of afternoon tea thing. So if you help me, I'll be a bit quicker. So I'm going to ask you some questions if you answer quickly. And then at the end of it, I'm just going to ask you to sit still because I'm furthest away from the cake, just so I can get to the cake first, okay? So this is what we're going to do. I'll stay away from that microphone as well. So I don't know if you can recognise that chap, but that's David Attenborough, really enthusiastically digging and planting a tree for his 90th birthday. So we've heard a lot about older adults, haven't we? But older adults don't necessarily have any issues, so I think we need to think about that. And it's worth saying that I'm an exercise physiologist, although I work for the Conservation Volunteers. So William said I'd talk to you very briefly about human evolution, and roughly how long would you say we've been humans? Remember, dinner is waiting, lunch is waiting.
300,000 years.
Who said that? That's a good answer. Okay, 200,000 to 300,000 years, and I'll roam backwards and forwards, so not all of you are blinded at the same time. So roughly 200,000 to 300,000 years. If we compress that into 24 hours, then for 23 hours and 58 minutes, what sort of existence do you think we've had? 99% of our existence as humans. Speak up.
No.
Indoors, outdoors?
No.
Doing? So would it, during that time, would you have sat down doing this? What would happen if you sat down doing this? Would somebody have brought you lunch? No. And the biggest of us would have eaten the lunch anyway, wouldn't we? So for 99.58% of your existence as humans, you have done physical activity as a requisite action of your daily life, just to survive. And then 1 minute, 52 seconds ago, in the 24 hours of our evolution, the Industrial Revolution started. So we were still physically active, but it wasn't very good for us, was it? It was machines, and women and children in particular were used in some really dire circumstances. And our diet changed, and it was really quite a poor diet. And then only 17 seconds ago, in 24 hours of our evolution, everything changed for us, which is a fraction of the time we need to adapt as humans from a genetic perspective. And we became predominantly sedentary. You have all been predominantly sedentary this morning. Even when William told you, you were building up unhealthy electrical discharges and generating antioxidants. Some of those cakes down there have antioxidant fruit on them though, so you'll be able to compensate for that. And then just 7 seconds ago, so 7 seconds ago, in 24 hours of our human evolution, so the faintest of time, we started to identify diseases in certain population groups for the first time. And what diseases do you think they might have been? Cakes is a clue. Type 2 diabetes, there you go. In what population group? Come on, come on. It used to be called adult onset, didn't it? Is it called that anymore? Why not? Children, there you go. You're a hard crowd, aren't you? Okay, so life was challenging for us, but we adapted and we overcame that, and collaboratively, we overcame those challenges. And despite the fact that we are relatively weak against most animals, you try having a fight with your cat, they're quite hard, aren't they? And despite the fact that we had no tech, no medicine, do you know what happened? We became the world's dominant species. Which is quite a feat, isn't it? And we did that through overcoming challenge, through collaborative effort in the outdoors. So we are perfectly adapted to being out there and pretty much perfectly maladapted to being in here. So inactivity and isolation are bad for you, and we know that. But actually, being active is not easy. And I suggest that we are inherently lazy, because for most of our evolution, that's been protective, hasn't it? Because you had to do stuff, so you rest when you can. And if you don't believe me, spend a day watching your cat or your dog. If you don't interact with them, they will do roughly nothing, because that's what they're engineered to do. Eating lots. It's inherently designed to eat lots. Who finds it easy to eat lots? All of those who haven't put your hand up, I'll be watching you at lunchtime. And I won't ask you who finds it easy to get fat, but a lot of you will find it easy to get fat because you are genetically designed to be able to get fat and stay fat, because that's where you evolved from, because people could go through times of famine. However, it is in your nature to succeed, and wonderfully, all of you, and in fact everybody alive today, is a descendant of someone who has been able to succeed. Because otherwise you wouldn't be here, would you? And we've just lost that ability to some degree. So social prescribing for me, particularly in the outdoors, is about finding that survivor in the person and empowering them to do that. But that's nothing new, and you've heard about the new thing that social prescribing, but it's not new, it's ancient. We're just re-remembering it. And for a while we forgot it, and if you were cynical, you might suggest that people wanted you to forget it. Because why would you go out there and become healthier and happier in the green spaces or museums when you could buy medicines? So that might be a cynical view, but that you would have to take a view on that yourselves. But look, Paracelsus. Therefore, the art of healing comes from nature and not the physician. And what I would suggest, hopefully, obviously I didn't know him, is that it's not just nature being in the outdoors, but the nature of us as well, which is to help each other. And I think that by helping each other, which is the crux of social prescribing, we can overcome many of today's ills. So that very briefly is social prescribing. I'm not going to tell you any more about that because you've heard a lot of that. The only thing I would say is that you hear about it coming from the GP surgery, which is fine, but a lot of people don't go to the GP surgery, do they? So don't only think that's where to go. GPs, CCGs, have your link workers in other places as well. Job centre pluses, pubs, where people go but don't come to see you. But all of these things down here, which is not health, impact on health. Only 10% of your health is impacted by things that the NHS can have anything to do with. The rest is outside of that. And so what it's saying then is that social prescribing finds the survivor in you, empowers you, because only you can fully make yourself better again. And again, for the clinicians in here, Hippocrates, you will have signed something akin to the Hippocratic Oath. Hippocrates tells us that true healing comes from within us. Because if you are in a very bad place, you can have the best health message in the world. But if I think my life is crap, it doesn't matter, does it? Conversely, if you can give me optimism and hope and the skills and the courage and the relationships to build that health, I will do it myself. And that's where a lot of the savings are. And so part of my role, I'm funded by a big lottery fund, it's wonderful that they choose to do this. So the Big Lottery Fund work in collaboration with NHS England, and I am funded to help develop a quality assurance process for social prescribing. So that's what I do for 2/5 of my week. There's not going to be a new social prescribing tool, but it's right and proper, if a lot of public money goes into social prescribing, that there should be some level of quality assurance. What you haven't heard is about any funding going to the provider. The providers, so us, Mersey Forest, other people like that. I think that will come. A few years ago when I was saying that, people thought I'd lost the plot. Now they just think I'm being optimistic. So that's a really big step forwards, isn't it? And I think that will come in a few years' time. So it will be best practice over mandatory, the quality processes, but if you don't do something that is recognised nationally as best practice, there's not much difference in law whether that was mandatory or not. We'll have a minimum acceptable standard and recognising the variation in social prescribing. At the end of February, you'll see a lot of work coming out about consultation for this, but it will be as easy as it can be to protect you. And we're looking particularly to protect providers from themselves, who try to help, but sometimes just push their boundaries a little bit. That's a little graph I drew. You might not be able to see that, but it talks about evidence and acceptability. And just let's be serious about what we're trying to achieve. For most people, the greatest risk is what, do you think? That they continue to do nothing. Exactly. That is the greatest risk. And the evidence tells us that. And most of you in your social prescribing, going for walks or in social groups outdoors in the great outdoors, the risk is very low. So let's be proportionate. And let's recognise that the efficacy of many drugs, how well they work, isn't as good as you think it is, if you take it as you should do. And 30, 40, 50% in some cases of people don't take the drugs as they should do. So let's be reasonable about what we're doing. But look out for the social prescribing quality processes. Bear in mind this is a minimum acceptable level. We're not going to put any more work on you. Principally, we're looking to protect you, and that's RCNHS and the big lottery fund. And so William, wherever he's gone, spoke about some of the evidence, and we gather evidence when we can. Obviously, it's quite expensive, but we work with the University of Westminster and the BBC, actually, to look at salivary cortisol levels. And we found after 8 weeks of being in Green Gym, people had a significant change to salivary cortisol levels, and which mapped to WenWeb's measures on anxiety and depression and stress. And that was similar in mindfulness as well in the outdoors, which is a different group. So there's some really good evidence there. So it all stems from our evolution. You are not designed to do what you're doing now. You are designed to be out there and cold and in groups. So you could get your food, because it's quite cold out there, isn't it, and walk around in groups, which would compensate for some of the cake. Depends how much cake you eat, of course. So that's my final slide. So the final slide is that we've been told you can get medicines for this, you can get cures for that, and people want to sell you stuff. And we live in a capitalist society where we medicate things that don't need to be medicated. So you can buy anti-inflammatories, you can get antioxidative teas, you can get anti-this, anti-that. But actually, if you look at the myokine function of muscle, you produce all your own drugs that you need if you are physically active and cool. And do you know what? It's the only time they will be bioengineered for you. The only other time that ever happens in your life is when you take breast milk from your mother. It's the only other time you have a bioengineered product for you, and it's free. So really what it says is that the biggest predictor of physical activity is loneliness and isolation wrapped up with within activity. Because we're pack animals, we get an oxytocin response when we're together with people doing what we want to do. If we're outside, that is enhanced. If we're outside doing something that we value, so planting trees, working on canals, that is enhanced even still. And P.T. Barnum, I know about this because I've had to watch, well, I haven't had to watch, I quite liked it actually, The Greatest Showman several times, because my 13-year-old daughter watches it most weekends. But it's great, isn't it? The greatest or the noblest art is that of making others happy. We need to do more research, but it's not a lot more than that. And it's not rocket science, and it never was rocket science. It's just nature, and it always has been nature. And now it's lunchtime. Thank you very much. Thank you.